All right, we're starting here on the top of Yutet Amud Aleph. So Tana, Lamdo Chapina. The reason that he had to go to the Beit Aftinas was to learn the Chapina, to learn the process of doing the Ketoret on Yom HaKippurim. Amar Papa, Shtei Lishkot Ayudo LeKohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol had two Lishkot that were, quote-unquote, his. Achat Lishkat Parhedrin, which we recognize from the beginning of the Masechta, which is where he stayed during the period of sequester going into Yom HaKippurim. Achat Lishkat Beit Aftinas. The other one was the Beit Aftinas, which was really relegated for the Ketoret, but was assigned to the Kohen Gadol as well, because that's where he learned how to do the Ketoret and the process of the Ketoret for Yom HaKippurim. Chad b'tzafon v'chad b'darom. One of them was in the north, and one of them was in the south. Chad b'tzafon, how do we know that one was in the north? It's none. Vav lishkot ayu ba'azara. There were six lishkot, six chambers that were inside the Azara. Gimel b'tzafon v'gimel b'darom. Three on the north side, three on the south side. Shibidarom, this is the list of them on the southern side, from east to west. Lishkat HaMelach was the chamber of salt. Lishkat HaParva and Lishkat HaMadichim. So Lishkat HaMelach, Shishem Ayunotni Melach LeKorban. The reason it was called Lishkat HaMelach was because they had salt there for the Karbanot. Lishkat HaParva, Shishem Ayumolchim Orot Kodoshim. Over there they used to salt the skins that they flayed off the animals of the Kodoshim. For the Kohanim, they used to salt them over there. Terminology or the name Lishkat HaParva is very questionable. The Mefarshim bring down numerous reasons. One of them was that Parva was a Mechashef. He was a sorcerer, and the Lishkat HaParva was made through sorcery, which is the Bartanur brings down, which is incredible that they would have such a thing in the Mikdash. But then he somewhat alters that and says that, we'll see later on, that there was a chamber above it that had the mikveh, and the way that the water got to the mikveh was, quote-unquote, magical, was very difficult to understand, and that's why they called it the Lishkat HaParva, after this sorcerer. Others suggest that it was a Kohen that had drilled a peak hole through to see the Avodat HaMikdash, and he was killed over there. Others suggest it was a sorcerer who came from underneath and wanted to see the Avodat Yom HaKippurim, and he was killed there, and that's why it was named after him. So there are numerous different interpretations that are given in terms of Lishkat HaParva because of the difficulty of the name. Probably the closest one to matching up with what our Gemara says is that it's the Orot HaParim, and you put those two together, so it's Lishkat HaParva. Otherwise, it's very difficult to understand where the name came from. Valgagaita Beit Vila. So we just said that there was above it was the mikveh. Kohen Gadol b'Yom HaKippurim, that the Kohen Gadol used on Yom Kippur, because he needed to do his tvilot b'kodesh. Lishkat HaMadichim, Shama Yumadichim Kervei Kodashim. There they used to rinse down or wash down the inner sides of the Kodashim. U'misham Misiba Ola the Gag Beit HaParva. Now how did you get to the Beit Vila that was on top of the Beit HaParva? You had a spiral staircase that went up from the Lishkat HaMadichim, and that got you up to the Beit HaTfilah that was above the Beit HaParva. So those are the three on the southern side. Gimel Shevet Tzafon, three chambers around the northern side. Lishkat HaEitz, Lishkat HaGola, and Lishkat HaGazdi. Lishkat HaEitz, Amar Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, Shechachtim Haita Mishameshet. I don't remember what they used it for, the Lishkat HaEitz. But we know that the Lishkat HaEitz was in Ezrat HaNashim. It was one of the four lishkot, it's at the Nashim, where the Kohanim Bali Mumim checked the wood. Right, so if that's rated, that we know was the storehouse for the wood, was in the Ezrat HaNashim. The fact that there's another Lishkat HaEitz here, that's why he's having difficulty explaining what it is. It could have been that it was the staging area closer to the Mizbeach for the wood. Right, exactly. Once it was checked, it was put in there, possibly. Others suggest it was called Lishkat HaEitz, not the name of its utility, but rather the way it was built, whether it had a wooden roof or it had wood paneling, and that the next statement of Abba Shaul is coming to not say that it's a separate area or give him a different name, but rather suggest what the name of this wooden area was. Abba Shaul Omer, Lishkat Kohen Gadol Haita Achorei Shtehen, so that the Lishkat Kohen Gadol was after both of them. But Gag Shlushtan Shavit, and the Gag, the roof of all three of them was flat or equal. So I mean that they were captive to each other. You had to pass through one to get to the other because they were adjacent along the width of the wall of the Azara. Based on those Mefarshim that say it was the Lishkat HaEitz because of its utility, it stored wood, then Abba Shaul is describing another location, whether it's above or adjacent to this location of Lishkat HaEitz. According to the others that say that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov was just describing the Lishka, and not its utility, then Abba Shaul is reminding him what it was used for, that the Kohen Gadol stayed in there with the wood. And the wood was there, so lo tazuach dato. Again, another idea to keep him humble in his avoda, which we'll see repeat thematically through the daf.
Alright, so Lishka da Gola, Shamaya Bora Gola. The Lishka da Gola was called that because the cistern of the Gola was there. The cistern of the Gola was put in by the Olei Gola in order to have water in the Migdash, so that's why it's called Bor HaGola. HaGalgal Natunalav, and then they had the mechanism that was put on it, Mishama Spikim Maim Nechol Azara, and there they were able to draw water for the whole Azara. Ishkata Gazit, Shamaya Sanhedrin Dola, Sanhedrin Shalisro Yoshevet. That's where the Sanhedrin sat, Vedana Tekoanim. And they adjudicated the Koanim, but here it's determining whether they are Ra'ui to be in the Avodah. Mishinim Sabo Psul. They found there was a problem with the Koan. Elevesh Shchorim, Mitatev Shchorim. He's to wear black, wrap himself in black. Vyatza, Valachlo. He left, and obviously upset, despondent. Shalom Sabo Psul, Ayelovesh Levanim. Got put on white, umitatev levanim, wrapped himself in white, v'nichnas, umishameshim echav ha-kohanim. Therefore, he would then join the rest of the kohanim. I don't know if it meant that when he put on the clothing that he was putting on, it sounds like from here, the big day kahuna, which we'll see there's another location for them, which you have to reconcile, but it sounds like the big day kahuna were kept in Lishkata Gazit so that they could determine who was coming in and putting them on and using them.
Now, the Lishkat HaGazit was so wide that half of it sat in the Chol and half of it sat in the Kodesh. And that's so that the Sanhedrin itself could sit, because you're not allowed to sit in the Azara. So the part that was the Chol is where the Sanhedrin sat. And then the plaintiffs and the defendants or whoever came there would be in the Kodesh side because they would be standing before the Sanhedrin. And not only did the Sanhedrin here deal with issues of the Kohanim, but also dealt with issues that for broader Klal Yisrael. And having the Sanhedrin sit in the Makom HaMikdash was to show that they derived their samchut from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from a higher authority, as well as they were subject to a higher authority of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to place them there gave them a certain amount of religious standing, as well as a reminder that they were only shlichim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, with regards to what we said earlier in the Mishnah about the location of these lishkot, these chambers, the Mishnah said,
Hayta achorei shtehen. Achorei usually means behind. Now, behind can mean literally behind. Also, sometimes achore is used in terms of direction to be towards the west. Kedem is east, achor is west. So that means that the Lishkat Ha'etz, or Lishkat Parhedrin, would be then the most western of these Lishkot. And the other Mefarshim say that they were actually together. Lishkat HaGazit, which was made out of hewn stone, and was a large Lishka, actually was twice the width of the Lishkat HaGula and the Lishkat HaPalhedrin, or Lishkat Ha'etz. And therefore, it's to the most eastern part of the Azara. And then behind it, meaning towards the west, were the other two Lishkot, the Lishkot HaPalhedrin and the Lishkot HaGula. And the Lishkat HaEitz here, or Lishkat HaPalhedrin, was the most northwest of the two. So it was Achor, after or behind the Lishkat HaGazit, going from east to west. And it was also behind the Lishkat HaGula, which was in the southern side, and this was further to the north. That is what's meant by the Gemara when it says Achat Bitzafon, because over here, in the list of Lishkot that were mentioned here, Avashol mentions that the Lishkat Goen Gadol was there on the northern side. Now the Gemara is going to discuss Achat Bidarom. How do we know that there was one on the southern side?
Achat Bidarom. There was one in the south. Tetnan. We have a Mishnah. Shiva Sharim Ayub Azara. There were seven gates into the Azara. Gimel b'tzafon v'gimel b'tarom. Three in the north, three in the south, v'chad b'mizrach. And one on the eastern side. Shibidarom. And counting along the southern side. From west to east, shara dvaka. Sheni lo, shara korban. Shlishi lo, shara mayim. So you have these three she'arim that are on the southern side. Shara mayim, we discussed extensively in Masechet Shkalim, why it was called shara hamayim. And the nevuot of Yechezkel, and Le'atid Lavo, about the water flowing out of the Beit HaMikdash, starting from the Shar HaMayim. So that we discussed there extensively. The Shar HaMayim also served for the entranceway on Sukkot, for the drawing of the water, for the Simchat Beit HaShoeva, and to bring up the water, the Shivat HaMayim, for the Nitzach HaMayim on the Chag. So that's also why it was called Shar HaMayim. The Shar HaDlaka, Shar HaKurban, as Rashi says, Lo Yadati Lama Nikra Shmam Kach. I don't know why they were called that. So he says, I don't know why it was called Shara Dlaka, and I don't know why it was called Shara Korban. Shara Korban also had another name, possibly, which was Shara Bechorot. And that's because it was on the southern side of the Azara, so people were bringing their Korban, like a Kodshim Kalim, that only required to be shechted on the southern side, could bring in their Korban from the Shara Korban. That's why it was also maybe known as Shara Bechorot, because Bechorot are Kodshim Kalim that were brought up, so that might be where the name Shara Korban comes from. Shebe Mizrach, on the eastern side, is Shar Niganor. Shar Niganor, we'll get to later on the Masechta, about why it was called Shar Niganor. It's the name of the individual who brought the doors up from Egypt, Alexandria Shel Mitzrayim. It's very storied, famous doors. It also has a lot of background to it. Shar Niganor is the eastern, the primary gate into the Azara. On the eastern side, remember the Mikdash is laid out east to west. So this is the primary entrance into the Azara. Ushtei lishkot ayu sham. On its sides, there were two chambers. Chad b'mino v'chad b'smolo. One on the right, one on the left. Achad lishkat Pinchas
HaMilabesh.
One of them was Pinchas
HaMilabesh.
Was the one who dressed the Kohanim. He had the big day kuna, he dressed the Kohanim. Lishkat Osei Chavitin. On the other side was Lishkat Osei Chavitin. Now, Lishkat Osei Chavitin we already bumped into because that was the Chavitin that the Kohen Gadol brought every day, the requirement from his own money that he paid for the Chavitin. But they got started to working very early in the morning. Remember the Gemara asked about that, that as soon as they opened up the Azara, the people working on the Chavitin would start to go right away. So the Gemara says, oh, they didn't bake it right away, they had to prepare it. There was a lot of work to get it ready and get the fire going, so that they could actually bake the chavitin. So that was done, started very early in the morning. That was right on the left as you walked into the Azara. Now the Lishkat Pinchas HaMalbesh, you entered through the Ezrat Nashim. The door to that was in the Ezrat Nashim. On the other hand, the Osei Chavitin's entrance was either from the Azara or from the actual archway of the Shar Niganor. It had an entrance way either from the Azara or from something that had Kedushat Azara. That was the difference between them. It was also adjacent to the Lishka that was in the Ezrat Nashim, which Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov didn't know what it was, and then he was told that it was a Lishkat Shmanaya, which was, it was a Lishka with the Shmanim and the Yayin, because they needed that Shemen for the Minchat Chavitin. Before we mentioned that the clothing of the Kohanim was kept in Lishkat HaGazit. So now here you see Pinchas HaMilabesh is down here on the side of the Shar Niganor. Some reconcile that by saying that the clothing of all of the Mishmarot was kept in Lishkat HaGazit. But the clothing of the Mishmar that was active that week was kept by Pinchas HaMilabesh, and as they came in, he dressed them, so that they kept the two separate. One was the active Kohanim, and the other was the other Mishmarot were kept up in Lishkat HaGazit. In Shkalim, we saw his expertise was so sought after that even some of the higher Roman officials within the army used to have him fit them for their clothing because he did such a great job. So he might have been a master tailor, not just the person who dressed them and took care of their clothing. All right, Shivat Safon. On the northern side, you have from west to east, Shar Nitzotz, Binyan Achsadraya. So the Shar Nitzotz was a gazebo-like structure. Valiya Bnuya Lo Agabav. And there was an upper chamber on it. Sham Kohanim Shomrim Elamalo. The Kohanim used to guard the Mikdash up top. Levim Lamato, and Levim used to be down below. Finimi Menu. Achel. In front of it is the area of the chel that went around the Mikdash. That's the area between the Soreg and the wall of the Azara. Sheni Lo, the second one though, is a Shar HaKorban. So here, and this is in distinction to the Shar HaKorban that we said before, but probably Shar Bechorot. Shar Bechorban is on the northern side, where you would bring in a Korban for the northern side. Korbanot that were Kodshei Kodashim that had to be shucked on the northern side, you bring them in from there. And then we had Shlishilo Shar Beit HaMoked. Then the third one was the Shar Beit HaMoked, which we just spent a lot of time on. What was inside the Beit HaMoked? Those are the four chambers that were inside the chamber of the Beit HaMoked that we already discussed extensively. Now there is, truthfully, this is one Mishnah. There's another Mishnah that has more extensive gateways coming in on that side. One of them was the Shar Nashim, which was for women who had to do smicha on their korbanot. They also had an entrance over there. Now, whether that's the same as the Shar Korban or not, I mean, that depends on how many gateways you thought there were in the Mikdash. That is a machloket as to how many gateways there were into the Azara. That, again, we learned in Shkalim. If you remember, they said there were 13 hishtachavayot. There were 13 times that they bowed down. There was a machloket about what the 13 were connected. One of them said it was connected to 13 she'arim that were going into the Azara. And one of them said it was connected to the 13 breaches that the Vanim made in the Soreg when they came to show that they were no longer bound by that Soreg where non-Jews can't pass. But there we had a large number of she'arim that were mentioned based on that number of 13. Over here we only have 7 she'arim that are mentioned. No, none of them are visible. They're visible. The only Sharia that you have, which would have possibly been visible, are the Sharia Harabai. And that's not the case. The only one that possibly is Shar Hukhulda. The Shar Hukhulda was below ground, and all the retaining walls for Harabai still exist. So those retaining walls, you can see in those walls on the southern side, the doorway, that is down below, because Shar Chulda, the original models of the Mikdash, used to have, outside of the Shar Chulda, they used to have a monument for Chulda Neviyah, or somewhere where maybe that she gave her Nevuah. Later on, they figured out, and they changed their mind about this, that Shar Chulda was exactly because of the way you entered into the Mikdash. When you entered through Shar Chulda, you were underground, and then you came up a staircase that brought you into level with Har HaBayit, like a Chulda would enter, a weasel would come out from the ground. That Shar Chulda is still there. You can see it. The retaining wall that holds up the bayit that was below ground, that is still there. There's also possibly along that wall, the Shar Chatanim and the other doorways that were along the southern side because they were below ground. Doorways that are above ground, you're not going to find, but the ones that were below ground, they're still there. Okay, Vitanya. Chamesh Tvilot Vasar Kiddushim Tovel Going Gadol Mekadesh Bo Bayom. It's going to be a Mishnah we're going to have later on in the Masechta. That on the Yom HaKippurim, the Kohen Gadol does 5 times he ends up in the mikveh, and 10 times he has to wash his hands through the process of the Odah. Every time he changes his clothing from the big days Av to the big day Lavan, he has to do this. Kulan Bakodesh, all of them are Kodesh. Agag Beit HaParvah, which we mentioned before, that Makom Tevilah is on the top of the Beit HaParvah, which is in the Kodesh. Chutz Mizu. Except for the first one, Shaita B'chol. It was in the Chol, meaning that it was the first time he went to the mikveh. That mikveh he went to, he came not in the Kodesh, but in the Chol. Agabei Sharamayim. That was on top of the Sharamayim, which we saw before. The gateway, the Sharamayim. Bitzad Lishkato Aita. And it was next to the Lishka of the Kohen Gadol. So now, the Sharamayim, as we saw before, was on the southern side. It was the most eastern gate on the southern side, according to the Gemara here. And on top of it was a mikveh. That mikveh served as the mikveh for the chol. That's a mikveh that wasn't Kodesh. The other mikveh was on top of the Beit HaParva. And we saw before that you have Shibed Darom, Lishkata Melach, Lishkata Parva, Lishkata Madichim. So that was on the Lishkot, the chambers that were on the southern side. There you had the Lishkata Parva that had a Beit Vilah that was above it. So here you have the 2 Beit HaTvilot. One Beit HaTvilah serving as the one for the Chol, and one Beit HaTvilah serving as those from the Kodesh. And now, this is what it means, Achad B'Darom, because we see here that the Beit HaTvilah was adjacent to the Lishkat HaKohen Gadol. That shows you that there was one Lishka on the southern side. So then, it says here that the Lishka of the Kohen Gadol was adjacent to this mikveh. The Yadana, I don't know, Ilishkat Parhejin B'Tzafon, Lishkat Beit HaTinas B'Darom. Which one of the Lishkot of the Kohen Gadol was this? Is it that the Lishkat Parhedrin was in the north, and the Lishkat Beit Avtinas was in the south? Oh, Lishkat Beit Avtinas B'Tzafon. The Lishkat Beit Avtinas is in the north, the Lishkat Parhedrin B'Darom. And the Lishkat Parhedrin where he stayed was in the south. Omistavra. The Gemara says it's most logical to say the Lishkat Parhedrin B'Darom. The Lishkat Parhedrin was found in the south. Habai, my time off. Makdim, Kai, Umesached, Reglav, Vitavio. Makes sense that the Kohen Gadol would get up in the morning, urinate, relieve himself, then vitavil, and go to the mikveh. Now why he had to urinate beforehand, why does the Gemara mention that? There might be 2 reasons. One is that every time one urinated, he might have to go into the mikveh in order to return to the avodah. So therefore, that's why it's mentioned here. The other one, as Rashi says, is that a person, when they wake up in the morning, is compelled to relieve themselves. And so that would be the natural thing to do. The Gemara in Brachot speaks about the proper way to prepare for tefillah, is to get up in the morning, wash your daim, relieve oneself. So this is the proper preparations for the avodah and for entering into the mikdash. So it's giving you the natural order in the morning of what the Kohen Gadol would do, which is that he would relieve himself, because that's the smarter way to do this. So you can only have to go to the mikveh once. Plus, that's the proper way to prepare before you go before Hashem. Vazil etzafon. Then he would go over the north with gamar chafina. And we learn the process of the chafina of the ketoret. Vati the Beit HaMikdash. Then he'd go into the Mikdash. Vavid Avodah. Kule Yom. And then he would do the Avodah all day. Remember we mentioned before in the Mishnah that for the 7 days he performed the Avodah in the Mikdash to get ready. Well, the Bahadei Panyo, right before nightfall, then in the afternoon, Madwale, they sprinkled on him from the Paraduma. This is the Shitat Rabbi Akiva, which we saw before, who says that if you get sprinkled on, you are Tamei Tumat Erev. So we can't do the Avodah in the Mikdash if it's Tamei Tumat Erev. So he used to do it right before sunset so that he could be ready the next morning. He'll have Harav Shemesh immediately afterwards. Then he runs over to the south, Vitavio, goes to the mikveh again so he can be Harav Shemesh. Then Vinayich, and then he rests. I mean, he goes to sleep in the Lishkat Parhedrin. So the 2 times, right, it's a very long day, but the 2 times he has to go to the mikveh, one early in the morning, and one late in the evening, or towards the late afternoon, he has to go to the mikveh. And both times he starts out in the Lishkat Parhedrin. So it would make the most sense that the Lishkar Parhedrin was on the southern side, adjacent to the mikvot. That's what the Gemara is suggesting. Tiamar Lishkar Parhedrin, but Tzafon, if you want to suggest the Lishkar Parhedrin was in the northern side, Makdim Kayu Meisach Raglav, then what's the order going to be? He's going to get up in the morning, relieves himself. Then Vazil Darom, then he has to cross over to the southern side, Vitavil, and go to the mikveh. Vigamar Chafina, then he learns the Chafina over there, because that would be on the southern side now, Beit Aptinas. Vati the Beit HaMikdash, Ravid Avodah. Then he goes into Mikdash and does the Avodah. Kuleyoma, all day. Haripanya, Madu Alei. In the late afternoon, they sprinkle on him. Vadar Azil Darom, then he has to go all the way back to the south. Vitavil, go to the mikveh. Ubay Mahadar, Mezel Tzafon, Meinach. Then he has to go back to the north to retire for the evening, because that's where the Lishkat Parhedrin is. So, Mi Tarach, Matachinin Lei Kulei. Hi, we're going to drive him crazy. Let's go back and forth, back and forth. It's already hard enough. It's a long day without this. You're going to make him run back and forth between the two. It doesn't make sense. It says, Alam Alo Matachinin Lei Tfei. Why not work him hard? The Eats Tukihu Lifrush. In that we make it hard on him so that only someone who's doing Lashem Shemayim and was really into it would continue because it's so hard. And someone who was just doing this because he was a tzduki, he wasn't appropriate for the job, or he wanted to do what was wrong, he wouldn't be able to put up with the burden, and therefore he would quit. So the idea was that you drive him out by the difficulty of the avodah and the amount of effort that he had to put in, that only someone was doing the Shem Shemayim would actually continue. Inami. Inami is that there's a benefit even if he's a prushi, which is shelo tazuach dato alav. They shouldn't become haughty. And he shouldn't think, oh, I'm the Kohen Gadol, I'm doing all this stuff. You wear him down. So you wear him down, so he's like, I can't, look, this is hard work, and I'm not, I'm a little guy here, I have to work so hard at this. And it would take away any feelings of haughtiness. That's not the case. Because if you really think the whole thing is about making it easy for the Kohen Gadol, then put everything on one side, meaning that the Beit Avtinas and the Lishkat Parhedrin and the Beit HaTvila would all be in a line, right on one side. Inami tiskele bechado. Or let him just have one chamber. I think that answer is a little harder to say they should have one chamber because he's going to sleep in the same place that they're doing the ketoret, they're teaching him the ketoret. Doesn't seem as practical. Although to put them all on one side also, it's a question because he learned on the northern side. From there he had to go do the avodah. The avodah started on the northern side because the lishkat ha-tlaim is on the northern side. Shkitat of the tamid is on the northern side. So the avodah would start on the northern side, unless he started with Shumat Deshin, which would have been on the southern side. But that's maybe why Lishkat Beit Avtinas is on the northern side. Anyway, the Gemara gives numerous reasons where it becomes inconclusive as to where these were located. Beit Avtinas and the Lishkat Parhedrin, where he slept and where he did the Torah. The Gemara is inconclusive about this, about where they were located. Suggested first that the Lishkat Parhedrin should be in the south next to the Beit Avtilot. Then the Gemara seems to opt for the fact that maybe we do want to wear down the Kohen Gadol, and it should be on the northern side, which might be a quasi-conclusion of the Gemara, just saying that we don't know, because we have equal reasons to believe it was on the south or the northern side. Right now, V'amrlo ishi Kohen Gadol. Now they say to him, Adoni, the Kohen Gadol, and the Leima Tehavi Tiyufta, the Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua. Let's say that our Mishnah is a problem for Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua. Dama Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua. Hanei kahanei shluchei d'rachmona ninhu. Kohanim are the emissaries of God. The machloket is brought both in the Gemara in Kiddushin as well as in the Gemara in Nidarim. The machloket as to what is the status of the Kohanim. Are the Kohanim shluchei d'rachmono? They are the emissaries of God. They work on behalf of God. Or shluchei didan? There are emissaries in the Mikdash. Diamar shluchei didan, you know, because if you say that they are our shluchim, me ikamide d'ana lo matzina the mevad b'shluchei didan matzu abde. This is the conclusion of the Gemara with regards to whether Shluchei Didan or Shluchei Derachmono. The conclusion is that they have to be Shluchei Derachmono. They have to be the messengers, or emissaries of God. Because if they are our messengers, then how do you have somebody who becomes your agent when you, the executor or the sender, where you're sending an agent to act on your behalf, you can only do that if you yourself could do it. A Shliach can only carry out the same agency that you yourself could have done yourself. Over here, if you say the Kohanim are our agents, you can't go in and do avodah in the Mikdash. You can't perform what the Kohanim are doing. So to suggest that they are our shlichim is impossible. So that was Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua's conclusion and Denis Machloket that they must be shluchei d'rachmona ninhu because they can't be our agents. Because we as the senders of those agents cannot execute what they're doing. And that means that they can't be our agents. So therefore, shluchei didan matzu avdi. So meikamide the analo matzina the meivad. Is there something that we can't ourselves do with shluchei didan matzu abde, and then they could do on our behalf? Hakikamrei, So the problem is our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, the Lashon of the Zekenim is, Ata, you, Kohen Gadol, are Shlucheinu v'shliach beitin. You are our emissary, our agent, as well as the Shliach beitin. So how could they use a Lashon like that? That he's our agent. So if he's our agent, then it's Shluchei Didan. And that goes against what Rav Huna Breider said that he's there as Shluchei Derachmana. Rav says, no, that's not necessarily true, because over here there's an additional aspect of Mashbino. The whole Shavua that was taken in the Mishnah, they're saying that Shavua is taken what we're thinking and what Beit Din is thinking. Don't think that you could take the Shavua and say, this is what I had in mind to do, and that's what I'm taking the Shavua. The Shavua that we are making you take is a Shavua based on Adatenu. What we're thinking about that Beit Din and what Beit Din is thinking. That means that we are guiding to you as to what the nature of this Shavua is. So don't think you have the same thing in the Torah, the Brit that is done in the beginning of Nitzavim, where Moshe Rabbeinu talks about the fact. Don't think that you could go b'shrutli be. And you can say in my heart, everything's going to be fine. And yeah, this Shavua, I'm not a part of it. No, because this Shavua applies to everybody. And the Shavua is based on what Hashem's guidelines. You're not going to just say, oh yeah, I took the Shavua, but I had in mind Avodah Zarah, and that was okay, and everything will be fine for me. That's not going to work, because the Shavua here is guided by Hashem, and the principles of the Shavua are based on what Hashem says, not what you say in your mind. So the same thing here. The Shluchei Beit Din here, the Zakenim that are making being Mashbiah him, say to him, listen, don't think that you're taking a Shavua based on what's in your mind. You're taking a Shavua based on what we're thinking and what we're proposing over here. That's what it means here. Not that literally you are emissary or agent, but your Shavua here is guided by us and by what we are thinking. Tosafot over here spends a lot of time here on this issue of Shluchei Derachman and Shluchei Didan, because the Gemara is interesting. Over here, the Gemara is conclusive based on Rav Huna and Rabbi Yeshua. So too in the Gemara in Kiddushin. On the other hand, in the Gemara in Nedarim, the Gemara leaves it as unresolved, the issue of Shluchei Didan and Shluchei Derachman and Nidu. Why did the Gemara leave it unresolved in the Darim? It's obvious here that we have a conclusion, or a way to conclude. So why does there the Gemara not deal with it? So Tosfot over there says that the Gemara in the Darim is actually asking a different question. The Gemara's conclusion is that Shulchei Derachmana Ninhu. But, over there the Gemara in the Darim wants to know a nafkamina about Nidarim. If you take a neder that you are Mudar Hanan from a Kohen, and you say, I will not get any benefit from the Kohen, can he perform the Avoda for you in the Mikdash? Is he allowed to act on your behalf? Because if he's Shluchei Didan, if he's your agent, then it's a problem because he's providing you Hana. If he's Shluchei Derachmana, then he has nothing to do with you. And his abode in the Mikdash is not a benefit to you because he's not your emissary, he's God's emissary. He says that's what the Gemara Nedarim is discussing. In that context, the answer of Huna Breid Yeshua is not definitive, because Huna Breid Yeshua just says, what is the primary side or aspect of the Kohanim? Are they primarily the shluchim of Hashem, or primarily our shluchim? That, the Gemara concludes, is that they're primarily the shluchim, the emissaries, agents of God, because otherwise, shlichut wouldn't work here. We can't do it, so then we can't appoint them to do it on our behalf. But then, once you've gotten to that conclusion, how much is that true? When I say primarily they are shluchei derachmana, does that mean that they are completely shluchei derachmana? There is no aspect of shluchei didan? Or maybe they're primarily Shluchei Derachmana, but there's still an aspect of Shluchei Didan. For instance, a nafkamina is if you show up in Yerushalayim and you say, I want that Kohen to do my Korban, not the Kohen that's in the Mishmar that week. Do you have the ability to do that? But if they are purely Shluchei Derachmana Ninhu, then you have no right to do that because they are not acting on your behalf. You have no right to designate who does the Korban. On the other hand, if they are primarily Shluchei Derachmana, but they still have an aspect of Shluchei Didan, then you would have a right to intercede and ask for a specific Kohen to do your Korban. And the same thing would happen with regards to Mudar Hana. If you are made it a Surba Hana or Esther to get Hana from a specific Kohen, that difference will actually manifest itself in the conclusion as to whether you can bring a Korban or not bring a Korban when that Kohen is working. If they are primarily Shluchei Derachmana means 100%, then you can bring your Korban because you have no interaction. The Kohen and you have no relationship. Other than if they are primarily, meaning there's still a residual that is Shluchei Didan, then Mudar Hana would actually have an impact. And that's where the Gemara Tosfot says is, the Tosfot says that the Gemara Nedarim is inconclusive about whether they Shluchei Didan, Shluchei Derachmana, that's only in the residual. Is there a little piece that is Shluchei Didan, or is it 100% Shluchei Derachmana? There the Gemara is unable to come to a conclusion, that's why it leaves it inconclusive there. Whereas the Gemara here and the Gemara in Kiddushin is asking the broader question, as to how the Kohanim work. And there, the Gemara concludes that they are Shluchei Derachmana because it would be impossible for them to be Shluchei Didan. Right now, Huporeshu Bukheb ain't Porshim Bukhin. Mentioned the Mishnah that he separates from them and cries, they separate from him and cry. Huporeshu Bukheb Shechashdu Atztuki. He steps away and cries because they suspected him of being a Tztuki, and the whole purpose of this Shavuah was to make sure that he was aligning him with the Avodah, to do the Avodah like he was supposed to do it. Haim Porshim Bukhim. Why do they separate and cry? Damar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Kolach Hushein Bikshirim Loke Bigufo. Anybody who suspects someone who is kasher, lokeh bigufo, is hurt, meaning that he gets impacted. Mida keneged mida, his body is impacted by that. Kokach lama. So why do they have to go through these extremes here that they're making a shvuah and then they're all crying? So they should not prepare the ketoret outside, put it on the machta before you enter into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, like the tztukim. Obviously it was a prevalent problem. Since it was a prevalent problem, that's why they're putting the Shavuah. If it wasn't a prevalent problem, they wouldn't have the Shavuah. They were obviously dealing with this issue, which was a serious issue. We're going to have a story in a second about that. So what you see here is that, call Achoshed Bikshirim, anybody who suspects someone is otherwise Kasher, Lokeh B'Gufal, the Gemara in Shabbat brings proof to that. Proof to that is Moshe Rabbeinu. When Hashem appears to Moshe Rabbeinu, who says, about Bnei Yisrael, V'hein lo yaminu li. They're not going to believe me. What happens there? The Gemara says that he puts his hand, it's Mitzorat Kishalig. His hand turns into Tzorat. That punishment, and also possibly the Rachash, which is Lashon Hara, that he spoke inappropriately about Bnei Yisrael. There, from there, the Gemara learns, Achoshe B'Kshirim Lokeh B'Gufo. So over here, the Sanhedrin, or the Ziknei Sanhedrin, which are forcing him to take a Shuah, because they suspect he's a Tztuki, they are possibly Achoshe B'Kshirim. So in order to, in a sense, do tshuva for that, or be machnia themselves and say, look, we're not really choshev b'kshirim, but we have a serious issue here. So they cry because they're possibly suspecting someone who there is no suspicion about. Now the Gemara brings down a story. But it's tzuki achad, tanu banan, masib tzuki achad, shidkin mi bachutz, he was the Kohen Gadol, obviously, and he fixed it outside. The Gemara later on, we're not going to discuss it over here, the Gemara later on will discuss the major machlok between the tzuki and the prushim. Just in a big picture, the difference between them is where you put the ketoret on the machta. Kohen Gadol, when he went into the Kodesh HaKodeshim with the ketoret, had in one hand a machta, which is a pan full of coals, and the other hand he had the ketoret itself. In Yom Kippur, he used the bazech, he had a spoon, and then he had to move the spoon and pour the ketoret into his hand. From his hand, he had to put it on top of the coals to make the ketoret, to be makriv the ketoret in the Kodesh HaKodeshim, in front of the Aron ben Abadim, or in the time of the Vayit Sheni, when there was no Aron, where there would have been the Badim. And he puts it there. Now, the Prushim say that the Kohen Gadol enters the Kodesh HaKodeshim. After he's in the Kodesh HaKodeshim, he puts the pan down and he puts the Ketoret into the pan. After he's already in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. The Tztukim believe that he put it on the pan before he entered into the Kodesh HaKodeshim. And then he entered the Kodesh HaKodeshim while the Ketoret was already burning on the pan. And that's based on the Psukim in Parshat Achrimot, which is that, you're not allowed to go into the Kodesh at any time. When can you go in? Ki be'anan erel ha-kaporet. The only time you're allowed to go in is with the cloud. To be honest, the pasuk there, ki be'anan erel ha-kaporet, is ambiguous as to what the anan is. The anan there is undefined. It could be the anan, meaning the anan Hashem, or it could be anan, meaning anan ha-kaporet. And the parsha is very ambiguous, and that has impact all over. The word anan and ketoret get mixed up in these situations. It's not clear what the anan is. Is it the anan Hashem or is it the anan ketoret? Tztukim read it as being the only way you're allowed to enter into the Kodesh HaKodeshim is with the ketoret burning already. So they used to do it outside, whereas the Prushim did it inside, and that's the major issue that they're discussing here. So this tztuki, hitkin mi bachutz, he put it on outside, and then mechnis, and then he went in. Nobody knows what he did because nobody's allowed to be there when he does the ketoret. Why are you doing the ketoret? The Kodesh HaKodeshim, nobody's allowed to be in the Kodesh, nobody's allowed to be near you. And same thing, when the Kohen did the ketoret on the Mizbech HaZav on a regular day, nobody was allowed to be near him there. They all had to be outside the Heichal, or outside of the area Ben Olam the Mizbech. And that whenever the ketoret was done, there had to be a separation of anybody else, so there was nobody else who knew besides the individual themselves. But Yitziyato, when he exited, Ayah Sameach Simcha Gdola. He was excited, exuberant, meaning that he couldn't believe he got this done. Pogo Baziv, his father saw him, Malo Bini. Afal Pishat Tztukim, Anu, Michirim Anu, Mina Prushim. Says, even though we're Tztukim, and we're proud to be Tztukim, we're afraid of the Prushim. If they find out what you did, they're gonna kill you. What are you doing? Alright, you got it done. So listen to his response. Amalo, Kol Yomai, Aiti Mitzdera, Amikra Zeh, all my life, this pasuk bothered me. Ki Be'anan, Ere'el, Akaporet. that with the Anan I will appear before the Ketoret. Marti, Matai, Yavoli, Yadei, Vaikamenu. When will I get the chance to be Mekayim this Pasuk? Shav Shabbat, Yadei, Lovaikamenu? Now I finally got the chance to do it. All these years I waited and I finally got the chance. I shouldn't be happy. I shouldn't be excited about this. By the way, these words should ring a bell for you. These are the same words that Rabbi Kiva uses when they are breaking his body and he's starting to say Shema. And his Talmidim ask him about it, and he says, "Kol yomai hayiti mitzter al mikra zeh, b'chol nafshecha." I was worried about this pasuk my whole life. How is it that you can do Ahavat Hashem b'chol nafshecha? Now that it's happening, and now I have a chance to do it, shelo yikamenu, I won't keep it. These are the exact same words that Rabbi Kiva uses, meaning that he feels about this pasuk. It's a play on that, in a sense, that a spoof on whether Rabbi Kiva is giving up his life for what he believes in, Ahavat Hashem. Here this tzuki feels the same way about doing the Torah outside. That he thinks that that's worth giving up his life to do this. That's how he felt about it. Lo ayu yamim mu'atim. Only a couple days later, Hashemit. He passed away. V'utal ba'ashpa. His body was in the heap, the garbage dump. V'yu tolayim yotzim mechotmo. And there were worms coming out of his nose. Rashi says worms coming out of his nose because your nose is the first part of the body to enter into the Kodesh HaKodeshim. That's why he's punished. I would have suggested, possibly. Right. The Ketoret is all about the smell, the incense, and therefore that's why they were coming out of his nose to indicate that he had sinned in that way. Nose is the first thing of your body that would go in. So Gemara says with the Gari of Beit HaMenuga that if you're walking backwards, you're not done until your nose crosses over the finish line. You're not tameh. That's what Rashi suggests over here. I thought maybe the smell would be a better explanation. Some say that immediately as he exited, he was killed. The Tani Rabbi Chia. To begin, kol nishma ba'azara. Suddenly heard a strange noise in the azara. Shebal malach v'chavato al panav. Malach came and smashed him on his face. The Kohanim rushed in, and they found the imprint of a kaf egel, the hoof of a cow, ben ktefav between his shoulders, shenemar, regalehem, regal yishara, in the maseh merkava by Yechezkel, it says that their legs are straight, kaf regalehem, kaf regal egel, and their feet are like the feet of an egel, of the hoof of a calf. So that would be an indication, or a siman, that he was killed by a malach that killed him over there. Now, the Sichud Musar of Shmulevitz and the Sichud Musar brings this down in two locations. In one location, he says that, speaking about Midah Keneged Midah, that in general, when it comes to Midah Keneged Midah, Hashem tries to indicate through the punishment what the problem was, what the chait was. The whole idea of Midah Keneged Midah is that it should awaken the person to the problem. That the punishment then teaches them about what the problem is and they know what to rectify. He says that we are many times blind to that. It's one of the most difficult things to see, that people always can talk themselves out of why they midah keneged midah. They'll find something happened to them, and they'll say it happened because of something else, even though there should be something else that was obvious why it happened to them. We're really blind to that, and many times it takes a third party or somebody on the outside to help us see that midah keneged midah, because we're always able, through our defense mechanism, to say, no, it wasn't that, it was this. Even though you'll come up with a reason why it was Midah Keneged Midah, but it won't be the right connection. We're blind to that. He says there are some times where the Midah Keneged Midah is not for the person themselves, but for everybody else. He says that's just one example of that, because his death had no bearing on himself. Couldn't see it, he was dead already. The only reason, there was no tshuva for him anymore. The whole purpose of the Midah Keneged Midah here was for other people to see what happened to him. That's one location that he mentions it. The other location he mentioned it is right before Yom HaDin, he says about Nachbasar Darchenum Nachkora, that we have to look into our ways and make sure that we are doing what's right. Not only do we have to look at our masim, our actions, we have to look into our drachim, our whole path, and avodat Hashem, we always have to check on that. He says, because it's very easy to get pulled off the path. Because people in life take up issues, we get mixed up, we're doing things, and then we get led off the proper path of avodat Hashem. He says, part of Nachbasar Darchenum is to look at the path that we're taking. Because many times we become so confused or we get sidetracked with what we think is right that we're even willing to be moser nefesh for what we think is right. Look, is it Stuki over here? This Stuki is willing to be moser nefesh to do what he thinks is right here even though he's totally off the path. Doing something that is against the halacha, he's moser nefesh to do it even though he's on the wrong path. And so he says that we always have to look into ourselves. He gives some hints about how to do it. He says that generally, it's yashrut. The right paths are things that are yashar. It says that the natural way of a person is to be yashar. And therefore, the things that you do should feel like you're yashar. And he also says that Torah is darchei darchei noam. The ways of the Torah are pleasant. And so those are two things that should guide you in your avodat Hashem. That you want to know if you're taking the right path. that your way should not engender controversy, machloket. Again, obviously there are times when you have to, but he's trying to give indications for people to look and take a introspection with regards to their Derech Hashem. He says, otherwise you can end up like this stuki over here where you're moser nefesh for something that's not right in the end. And that's not where you want to go in life. So those are two places that the Sichlet Musar brings up this story. Okay, now, Amar Rav Zechariah ben Kvutal. Zechariah ben Kvutal used to read from Daniel in front of him. So, Matni Le Rav Chanan bar Rav Lechia bar Rav, Kameh de Rav. Rav Chanan bar Rav was teaching Chia, Rav's son, in front of Rav. Amar Zechariah ben Kvutal. He used a pei instead of a bet. Mechavi Le Rav Yadei Kvutal. And he indicated through his hand that it was Kvutal, not Kifutal. V'nemele Meimar. So why didn't he just tell him? Why did he signal to him? Just say it. So Kriyat Shema Bekori, who's in the middle of Kriyat Shema. Yeah, Gavna Mishori? Wait, if he's in Kriyat Shema, how can he do that? Farmer Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta, Kriyat Shema, lo yirmoz be'enav. Person who's reading Shema should not wink with his eyes, v'lo yikrotz b'sfatav. He should not move his lips in order to indicate something, and not point with his fingers. So as Rashi points out, these are all the same thing, just different verbs are associated with different body parts that you're using to signal. This is the verb that's associated with each one of these body parts. So Yaakov, it on me that I called Yaakov, and that Hashem doesn't want it. He's not interested in your Shema if you're doing other things. Why are you doing Shema? How could Rav do this? It says, Lokasha, Perek Rishon, Harpa Perek Sheni. Depends which Perek you're in. If you're in the first Perek, then it's problematic. If you're in the second Perek, it's okay. So in the first Perek, as Rashi says, requires extra Kavanah. Or because it involves Avat Hashem and the Ikar part of Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemayim, that's why in Perek Rishon it's not allowed. But Perek Sheni already, it's a lighter form. We allow you to respond or do something if you have to. Mishabur brings down that there are some that say, obviously, that in the second parak you shouldn't do it as well. It's only if it's absolutely necessary that you should do this. But if it's not necessary, then there's no reason that you can't do this. We don't allow you to get distracted from it. Yes, this is one of the halachot of the Kriyat Shema that's not found in Masechet Brachot, that's actually found in Masechet Yoma. And we do pass on this halacha, it's brought down halacha, and the Mishabur comments on it, it's very interesting. He says that people who chew tobacco, for them it's very difficult to go for such a long period of time without smoking. He says, for the first parak in Kriyat Shema, for sure you cannot be involved or do anything like that. In the second parak, he says it's problematic. But with these people who have a problem now, they need it because they can't go on without it.
Addiction.
Right, it's addiction. Then in the second parak, there's a little more room for it. But it's interesting that he's discussing that issue in this context of the parak Rishon and parak Sheni. Again, that he says that it's better in parak Sheni not to do this. And that's the way that most of the poskim believe. This might relate to what is the oraita of Kriyat Shema. Which part of Kriyat Shema is considered to be Doraita, which is a major machloket in the Rishonim, as to whether it's just the first Pasuk, or it's the first Pasuk, Shema Yisrael plus Vahavta, or is it the entire first paragraph, or is it the first and second paragraph, or is it the entire Kriyat Shema? If every one of those opinions is supported within the Rishonim, this might be evidence in the fact that the first paragraph has a greater standing than the second. I mean, Vahavta is on a different level than Vayayim Shemoah. Right then, Tarabanan, Vidibarta Bam, you must speak in them, in the in them and not in tefillah. Here we have a number of interpretations we'll come back to in a second. In divrei Torah you have reshut to speak, in anything else you do not have reshut. Secular topics are not permitted. Make sure that divrei Torah are the major thing that you speak about, not just the pressing things that you speak about. They're not relegated to a small portion of your daily activity. Now, obviously, there's a big nafkamina between these. The first interpretation says there is no secular speaking, there is no secular studies whatsoever. The second one permits it only if it is secondary to the primacy of Torah. So, Omarova, sach sichat chulim over baseh. Someone who just speaks sichat chulim, as Rashi defines it, sichat chulim doesn't mean things that are mundane, but it's like halach rosh, sichat yeladim, things that are not just mundane, but things that are unnecessary, just frivolity, have no real purpose. Then you're in violation of an isur aseh, which in America, v'dibarta bam, bam v'lo b'dibarim acherim. You must speak in them and not anything else. So that's the isur aseh. Rav Acha bar Akiva amar over b'lav. You violate a lota, says Shinemar, called Rim, Yigeim, or Yuchalish the Daber. So there we have an Isra, the person's not allowed to speak about these types of items, these types of issues, lo Yuchal the Daber. One may not speak. Here you have an Isra Lav, playing on the word Yigeim. Now, back to Bam Velo B'Tfilah. What does it mean that you're allowed to speak in them and not in tefillah? Rashi says that you're allowed to say Kriyat Shema out loud, but you're not allowed to say tefillah out loud. Kriyat Shema you say out loud, tefillah you can't say out loud because we learned out from Chana that she said her tefillah b'lachash. She said it quietly. On the other hand, but Kriyat Shema you can say out loud. Right, that's one. Tosafot says he doesn't think that's the right explanation, but rather he thinks nearly, Bam Shoel mipnei Yira u'meshib mipnei Akavot v'lo b'tefillah. You have a dispensation to interrupt Kriyat Shema to respond to somebody who's coming, whether it's a king or your Rebbe that's coming. The Gemara in Brachot discusses the different Kavod, Yira, where you're allowed to be mafsik, what you're allowed to be mafsik for, but that's only true in Kriyat Shema. In Shemon Esrei, you cannot interrupt whatsoever. There's no Mipnei Yira, Mipnei Kavod in Shemon Esrei. There you only Mipnei Melech. You can't do anything. You can't respond whatsoever. So that's why Tosfot says, Bam v'lo b'tefillah. These interruptions apply to Kriyat Shema, not to tefillah. And the one that I thought of as soon as I read it is brought down by the Tosfot Tishanim. He says it's based on a Gemara in Shabbat and Daf Yud about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai v'chavirav. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai v'chavirav, over there it says that those that Toratan u'munatan, Torah is your profession, meaning that they're living and breathing Torah all the time, then you're exempt from tefillah. You don't have to daven tefillah. So over there, the Gemara says, Tosafot brings it down that you're exempt from tefillah, but not from Kriyat Shema. You have to do Kriyat Shema because it's Doraita. Tefillah, which is only Derabonon, that you can forego if you're learning Torah. The Yerushalmi actually has it there that the Kriyat Shema is also knocked out because there's no difference between Kriyat Shema and Limud HaTorah. There they blurred the lines. In Yerushalmi, the lines are very blurred between Kriyat Shema and Limud HaTorah, and therefore Limud HaTorah is equivalent to Kriyat Shema, and you wouldn't have to say Kriyat Shema even. But based on the Bavli and the way that the Tosfot interprets over there, the Bavli, that would be a differential. Bam. With Kriyat Shema, you have to interrupt your learning. Velo b'tfilah, tfilah, you do not have to interrupt your learning for. You can continue to learn and not daven. Right, now, the Gemara continues. Bikesh lehit nam name. If he was falling asleep, pichechuna makin lefana be'etzvat strada. They bang in front of him, they make a noise in front of him, the Gemara will discuss this. Vamim lo ishi kohen gadol, they say, Adoni, it's kohen gadol, I'm old. Stand up, vafeg achat al haritzpa. Do us some acrobatics on the floor here, do something for us to show us how you're gonna do it. Umasikin oto, to get him up, you know, getting going, get the flow going. Achi yagiz manashchitan, so keep him awake until the morning. So it was a way to engage him so that he would be active and not fall asleep. My tzrado, what is this tzrado? I'm Rav Yehuda, tzarta dida. It's, way Rashi was it, it's like tzara. Tzarta dida means like a co-wife, or a co-kohen gadol. And that is, it's your nemesis, in a sense. It's the person that causes you the most problem because they're closest to your position. So too, Rashi says over here, my hi, gudal, it's your thumb. The chavi ravuna, vazakala bekuli bei rav. Ravuna gave it, did it, he showed them what it was, and everybody in the Beit Medrash jumped and stopped learning because they heard him do this. Basically, it's snapping your fingers. According to Rashi, it's snapping your fingers between the thumb and your pointer finger, the two fingers that are adjacent to each other, because that's a tzarato. So if you do that, you can make some noise. Obviously, the louder noise you make is with your middle finger, and that's what the Rabbeinu Tam says. The Tosafot Yishanim brings down from the Rabbeinu Tam that tzarda means, and it says it's the thumb and the amah, the middle finger. And it says, you can tell, because that makes a lot more noise than doing it with your pointer finger. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam thinks it's the snapping the fingers like the way that we would snap your fingers today. Okay, now, Gemara says, that you have to do one on the ground. So, mahi, what is that? So, Rav Yitzchak says, what they want him to show him is, al-chadat, do something new that we haven't seen before. So then, mahi, what is that? Show us the kido. Now, kido is a very difficult thing. It's mentioned in the Gemara in Sukkah that Levi used to do a kido. It was the ability to, basically, jump off your feet onto your hands, but not just your hands, on your thumbs. You have to support your entire weight of your body, doing a handstand on your thumbs, jump into that position, and then bounce back onto your feet from that position. So you can see people doing that with a handstand, with their palms of their hands. They jump onto their hands, and they push themselves back up. That people can do. But this was done only on your thumbs. This was a pretty extreme type of acrobatics. Right. Levi did it and got hurt before Rabbi. We'll get to that in the Gemara and Sukkah. But obviously, it's a very dangerous and difficult. So they wanted him to show him how he does that. So whether he could or couldn't do that, whether he did some push-ups, or whatever he did for them to get him awake. They keep him busy, engaged until the Zman Shchita. Tana. They didn't use musical accompaniment to keep him up. They had to speak to him. What were they used to say to him? They said things that got him going. If Hashem doesn't build a house, then the builders have worked in vain. So it's over here. If you don't do things lishma, it's all worthless what you do today. In Yom HaKippurim, you better have in mind to do it right and to have the right mindset, because if Hashem's not happy, all you do is worthless. Miyaki Rei, Yerushalayim lo yushenim kol halayla. The important people in Yerushalayim used to not sleep all night. Kadeshi Yishma Kohen Gadol kol havara. So you would hear there was noise going on, that he's not the only one up, but there are actually other people up, and therefore the distinguished individuals of Yerushalayim used to stay up. Because he would feel like there's a lot of people doing this. He's got to stay with them. He's got to keep it up. Tanya, Abba Shaul Omer, Abba Gvulim, Ayusu Kain, Zecha the Mikdash. That outside of the Mikdash, in the Gvulim, they used to do it, Zecha the Mikdash. Now, whether they're saying this in the context of they did this while the Mikdash was extant, or even after Churban Abayit, Zecha the Mikdash, they could be Zecha the Mikdash in both scenarios, they used to stay up all night on the night of Yom Kippur, learning Zecha to the fact that the Kohen Gadol used to stay up. Problem was that it led to really bad things. That what it means that bad things happen, that's about Narada. Because I'll tell you why. The Amar Eliyahu, the Rav Yehuda, Achua, the Rav Salah Hasita. The Yonavi appeared to Rav Yehuda Achua, the brother of Rav Salah Hasita. Amrito, Amai Loati Mashiach. Why isn't Mashiach come? So, Haidna Yom HaKippurim Hu. It says, because today is Yom Kippur, ve'avo kama betulto ben Narada. And a number of betulot in Narada were Nivolu on the night of Yom Kippur. So can you believe this? The night of the Yom Kippur. How could it be that this is happening? So what happened was they were staying up all night. What happens when people stay up all night? See, on the night of Shavuot, instead of learning all night, and they're socializing here, socializing there. What was happening was that the women and men were ended up socializing all night, and it didn't lead to good things in Arda. And that's what he's saying. That in the end, it was leading to bad things instead of good things. That's part of why they entered in the slichot on the night of Yom HaKippurim into the davening and Maariv. Generally, we don't have slichot and Maariv time. It's exactly for this issue. Which is that people, after they finished davening on the night of Yom Kippur, they had a whole night, nothing to do. Right? Then things were not going to end up in a good way. So they extended Maariv. They entered in the slichot in order to make Maariv longer, to keep people preoccupied for a longer period of time on the night of Yom Kippur. Because of this story, people were socializing and doing things that were not appropriate on Yom HaKippurim. That's why Mashiach wasn't coming. What does Hashem say about this? He says, that the Yetzirah is a person from the time that they're born, and they can't control themselves. They are Baal Korcho, they're forced into this situation. But Satan Mayamar, what does the Satan say about this? He must be excited about this. Now, Amar Lei, Satan Yom HaKippurim Lei Rishuta Listune. That the Satan on Yom HaKippurim cannot prosecute, can't instigate on Yom HaKippurim. Now, some places in Shas, the Gemara says, Hua Satan, Hua Yetzara, that the Gemara in Sukkah says that they're all one thing. Here, the Gemara seems to separate between the two of them. One is the Yetzara, which is the embedded desires that can be led to an evil side in the individual. Whereas the Satan seems to be an external type of instigation. So, Mimai, how do you know that's the case? Amarami Bachama, Satan be Gematria, Tlat Mea, Vishitin Varba. Gematria of a Satan is 364. Shin is 300. Nun is 50. That's 350. Tet is 9. It's 359 plus the 5 of Ha. That gets you 364, Avi. So Tav Me'ev Shit Marba Yomei Yitlei Rishut Alistune. For 364 days a year, he is allowed to instigate. He's allowed to prosecute. Yomei Tikibri and Yitlei Rishut Alistune. Yom Kippur, he's not allowed to do that. So it's 365 days a year of the solar year, and then 364, which is very interesting. It goes by the solar year. Obviously, because over a machzor, over a cycle, the average lunar year ends up being a solar year. But it's interesting here is that there are two things that use the solar year, 365. One is here, the story about the Satan. The other thing is the Ketoret. The Ketoret is made for 365 days a year. It's interesting that those two are together because of the story in Parshat Korach. The story in Parshat Korach is when they have the Magefah, that when Aaron wants to stop the Magifah, he runs out with the Ketoret. And the Midrashim speak over there about how he confronts the Satan with the Ketoret. So the offset to the Ketoret, the day of the year, which is Yom Kippur, where the Ketoret takes primacy, and is the main area of Ketoret, which is 365 days, is on the day of Yom Kippur, when the Satan has no rule. He's unable to be Mesatein on that day. So there's a connection between that, the Ketoret, and the Satan, that there seems to be that the Ketoret is the offset to the Satan, and that's why they're both 365 days. Okay, we'll stop here.